Well, good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Today is the 13th day of August, 2019, and my name is Peter Wakeham. It's good to be with you on another Tuesday, and guess what? Today we get to sit and chat until 2 p.m. So we're back to the original format from today, 2 p.m., the original dynamic duo, myself and Dennis Johnson, will be with you, and we are hoping that you will stimulate our collective interests over the next 4 hours as we have a program that should be quite exciting. And our call number is, of course, 434-1790. You can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Lots of time for the chat today, 266-IVOB. And those are the facilities that you can use, and I'm hoping that I'll hear from you. Brief reflections this morning on the situation in the Democratic Labour Party. Of course, the DLP's annual conference was last held on the 12th of August, which would have been yesterday. So we are looking at 1 year since the last DLP annual conference, and I imagine that this year's conference will be rolling around in fairly short order. So, in much the way that we assessed the first year of the Prime Minister Motley's leadership, I think that it is now a good opportunity for us to assess the first year of the leadership of Ms. Verda de Pisa in the context of the Democratic Labour Party. I don't have to say this. I think that you all know that I am pretty much in Verda's corner as far as it goes. So nothing that I say here should be interpreted as being a personal attack or a smudge on the good lady. Nonetheless, I think that we have to take an objective look at her leadership to see where she has gone right and where she has gone wrong. And let's start with the objectives. And of course, her objectives versus mine are the critical thing. She wanted to lay a groundwork for rebuilding the party and also to offer a voice in opposition. I thought that the focus needed to be on rebuilding the party. And I also thought that she needed to place first and foremost a focus on her own self-preservation. Because of course, the only way you can be at the table is if you have a seat. So I felt that those were number one and two priorities. I did not think that the question of opposing was necessarily needed to be high on the list of priorities of the Democratic Labour Party. The reality is that in a 30 love situation, people have pretty much spoken to their uses for the Democratic Labour Party for the time being. And I felt that in the first year, the focus needed to have been on rebuilding and setting a stage and making it clear. So how has Verda done regarding her own objectives? In the context of the rebuilding, I'm struggling. One or two branches have been having meetings. However, I do not believe that there is any widespread perception that the Democratic Labour Party branches have been revitalized, that they're meeting, that they're active, that they're pursuing programs and initiatives, and certainly not that they're electing candidates. The revitalization could perhaps be on the way, but I don't believe that in the public domain there is a perception. The DLP needed to conduct a review of its performance in the last election, where it went right and where it went wrong. The leader indicated that that would be a number one priority of hers, and that too we have heard nothing of. Of course, I accept that it is entirely possible that the Democratic Labour Party could have done these matters in the public private domain and not necessarily leaked it into the public domain. However, nothing has been said publicly, and I have good reason to believe privately that no such initiative or no such review has been conducted. At the national level, there also appears to be a lack of cohesion. If you look at the shadow cabinet, there is none. There are pieces of a shadow cabinet, and I don't get a sense that they are functioning with any level of coherence. We were told that there was an abundance of talent available that wanted to be part of the DLP shadow cabinet. When you have no seats, pretty much anyone can be part of your shadow cabinet. And I found that the names that have been mentioned so far as shadow cabinet ministers have been anything but exciting. So here also I have some challenges where that is concerned. I don't know of any functioning committees within the Democratic Labour Party. We do have a lunchtime lecture series, which continues to be a source of some interest. The Democratic Labour Party gets unparalleled coverage of that every Friday. It's carried on television and often on radio. Bobby Morris has given probably two or three public lectures. I really am not sure of the long-term benefit of that. But what we have had is a lot of reflections on the DLP paths, and then we have had some reflections on future policy in a manner that is anything but coherent or coordinated. So candidates. I know of none being put in place. Again, it is possible that there are candidates in place and we do not know of them. But it's of particular importance that I did not hear any mention of Verla de Pisa being a cabinet, which basically means that if the government collapsed tomorrow, the DLP would scramble to find candidates to put in place because they have not yet identified a single one. And then we also have the question of Verla de Pisa herself. If she does not prevail at the next annual conference, her capacity to choose a comfortable seat would have been lost. And the reality, of course, in this business, as I said, is that if you want to have dinner, you have to be able to get a seat at the dinner table. And I would think that if she is not reelected and she is essentially consigned to another constituency, then one could argue that this would have been a major shortcoming of her role in office. She has made a spirited attack on government from time to time, and certainly I commend her in that regard. However, the report card, in my opinion, overall, does leave much to be desired. I'm anxious to see what will happen with the next election, the Democratic Labour Party, and we see what comes up or who comes up if she is challenged and if she is able to continue the process of rebuilding and if she is able to explain, certainly at the annual conference, what steps have been taken. So this brings us to my good friend Marcia Hines Lane, who, like Verla de Pisa, continues to be my good friend. Marcia, last week and also in an op-ed this week, has hit out at Lead Pipe and Just Jay's song Sometimes, suggesting that it promotes weak family structures, poor parental involvement, and ultimately deviant youth. She says, at the end of the day, consulting adults can do consensual things. That's fine. But at the point which relationships become simple sometimes, it's complicated by a child and decisions have to be made. Of course, she and I last week had an exchange regarding these decisions that have to be made. And I have asked, as a result, the new executive director of the Barbados Family Planning Association to join me for the first call this morning to tell us about the process of making these decisions that sometimes have to be made. And I believe Anderson is on the line. And I say good morning, Anderson, and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Man, I'm good. I trust you had a good crop over?
No, I was ill and I was working.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry to hear that. So I don't need to ask you whether you had one of those sometimes situations. And I'm happy that you are. No, that's not your thing. Last week we had some conversation with Marcia on this issue of abortion. The basic premise that she put forward that abortions were not readily available, certainly outside of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and there were challenges accessing those outside of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. My understanding has always been that the Barbados Family Planning Association was the preferred location for the conduct of that procedure. It was an accessible environment. Certainly, people who spoke to me off the air said that they had no major issues accessing abortions there, and they thought that the environment was generally supportive. What exactly is the truth regarding the Medical Termination of Pregnancy Act and also the matter of the Barbados Family Planning Association's role in the provision of abortions?
Okay. Let me first say that the act of termination is a serious decision, and a tough decision for any woman who makes it. And therefore, the environment in which it is provided and how it is provided must be in a way to accommodate their needs and their fears and their wishes and their dreams as it relates to what they want with regards to themselves. The Medical Termination of Pregnancy Act is, I think, a short but concise act that speaks to many things and many areas of the process. And it doesn't speak to other areas of the process. With regards to, let's focus on the really crux of the issue is, and then I'll give you my full understanding of how it is delivered in terms of the public and at the BSPA. The issue as it relates to a hospital is actually with regards to the latter part of the act. I want to make sure the last part of the act. regards to place. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to termination of a pregnancy that is more than 12 weeks in a hospital approved by the minister. This section 9 of the Act, and that's with regards to termination above 12 weeks. What the issue is with the definition is the definition of hospital, and the hospital being a place given permission by the minister to provide such services. Okay, Peter?
Okay. Am I clear on that? I'm good. So basically you're saying that the legislation does speak to hospital, but hospital can be differently defined. In addition to the clinic at the Barbados Family Planning, do you know of any other designated hospitals that are available for such purposes other than QEH and the FBA?
Let me speak to, I do not know of any others besides the QEH and possibly the Bayview.
Yeah.
So that is a question to ask the ministry themselves. Mm-hmm. One, but let me speak to the definition of it being 12 weeks. What it does allude to is that prior to 12 weeks, termination can take place at other places.
So there, okay, there's a possibility that what you could call a chemical abortions can take place elsewhere before 12 weeks.
And it can take place in other locations, mm-hmm, prior to 12 weeks.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and what I will now go is the section 12 of the Act, which speaks to the regulation that the minister may set in place for administration of such activity. Section 12 speaks that there should be counseling, that there must be records kept, there must be, where possible, forms of consent provided at whichever location, so that at any point, if the chief medical officer requests or the minister requests the information, that they can provide access, no matter where the location is.
Okay, agree.
And that goes to prior to 12 weeks, and it goes to after 12 weeks.
Okay. On a general basis, is it your opinion, and the opinion of your clients, that a woman who is over 18, who desires to have a medical termination of pregnancy can access such a facility at a reasonable cost with a reasonable level of discretion?
Yes, it is my opinion, quite a bit be our service or in some other locations, yeah.
The other question, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to add in that when they access here, they are given all alternatives. They're given all situations with regards to the person, their mental health, their situation, economic, socially, and if they feel they want to have access to this service or not, or if they're being pressured. If someone is being pressured against their will to have such an act, it will not be provided, and it will be contravening of the act to provide such a service with the person being pressured. The person has to be free and clear and sound judgment, mm-hmm, to make that decision.
Okay. Yeah, the other question I was going to ask then relates to the legislation and the question of this legislation. 1981, I believe, is our legislation. It's quite old.
1983.
Okay, so mm-hmm, it's 1983 legislation is quite old. It was groundbreaking in that time. However, there is a feeling now that we need to look at amendments and changes and upgrading the legislation in the context of several things, not least of which is the idea of the chemical abortion environment, okay, which is very popular. What do you think does government need to do regarding this legislation? Do you think it needs to be revisited? And what are some of the challenges that your organization has with it?
I don't have any problem suggesting in revisiting the act, if you want to bring it up to date. But what I would say to you, currently, even within our operation, our provision of some of these services, and most people, there are certain guidelines with regards to, like, we advise that, so the limit is 12 weeks outside of the hospital. Mm-hmm. So we try to within the first 2 months, and ourselves, and chemical, I'm discussing with my medical director, a maximum of 90. Okay. So the art does cover, to some extent within a good degree, most of those areas mm-hmm. of contention as it relates to administering of those. It was so groundbreaking and so comprehensive at the time in terms of the way we deliver that it has covered a lot of the modern adjustments that are taking place. If we're saying that we want to shorten some of the spaces between the where the act speaks to 12 weeks and 20 weeks, right. That's for debate. But in terms of the modern, especially when we're, how we deliver our services, the act is very comprehensive. Okay. What you asked me a second question. What was your second part of that question?
Well, no, it was really in relation to the act. What were the changes that needed to be made? And certainly, what were the things that the minister needed to do? So I think you've pretty much answered it. You're saying that you're reasonably comfortable with the legislation, but you don't have a problem with reviewing it.
Reviewing it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, this area with regard to contention with regards to the treatment of, in terms of those on the age of 16, in terms of on some mine, of course, our area of contention isn't really as it relates to termination. Our area of contention is with regards to sexual health access of young adolescents who are engaging in risky sexual behavior.
Okay.
That is not in direct relation to the act. That is in the provision of broader health care to at-risk groups, especially young people.
Mm-hmm.
So our area of contention is always the age of access versus the age of consent.
Which is 16.
I mean, 16.
Right.
Yes.
I was saying it's 16, but the age of consent to access medical services is 18.
18, yes.
Right. So we have a challenge where a 16-year-old who is having sex cannot access medical services, certainly without the parents' permission, until they're 18.
Right.
So
but they can have sex.
Yeah, you're old enough to commit to having sex, but not to go to the doctor.
Yes, I mean, if you agree, the responsibility of having sex, if you can get that consent, that responsibility, you should be able to take control of your own health care.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing, and this is not to divert too much, but I did a survey on sexual and reproductive health regionally some time ago. And when we presented this issue in Trinidad, the response of most people was, well, if there's a challenge with a disconnect, then it's increased the age of consent to 18. How do you respond to that idea that the solution might be, instead of dropping the age of consent for medical services to 16, you increase the age of consent for sex for 18?
So I'm going to say this. When most of these acts were written, let me stop there. Let me go back to where I want to say. The development physically and psychologically of a young person or a child in the modern era is completely different to what would have taken place when a lot of these acts were written.
Mm-hmm.
The development physiologically and psychologically of some of our young persons at 16 is tremendous, and some of the decisions that they're already making,
right,
because it's significant. So I think that argument is based on what we perceive to be a level of maturity that is occurring earlier now among our young people.
The point I've often made in these things, Anderson, is that people who argue that you should increase the age of consent for sex are of the opinion that the age of consent is anything more than persuasive regarding a young person's decisions to have sex in the first place. My sense is that when a young person makes a decision to have sex, they consider several things, one of which is the consent of the person with whom they're having sex. But I don't really know that the legality of that incident is in terms of the age, legal age specified, is of any real concern. And the fact, as you said, is that at 16, there is a level of sexual activity that would suggest that if it is not legal, you would have a whole lot of people breaking the law. But anyhow, let me thank you for joining me this morning. We had a good conversation, and hopefully, you wanted to say something else. Sorry.
Yes, my aim is not to be controversial. My aim is to bring clarity.
But then, nothing wrong with being controversial.
your
predecessor had a penchant for controversy, and I think it argued well for your organization. So I would encourage you to step into a similar realm. The services that you guys offer there are controversial services. Abortion is one of the medical termination of pregnancy is one of the most controversial issues. The distribution of condoms is in itself controversial. Don't run from it. I know that it's not your personality, but I think that you need to embrace the need sometimes to step into these tempestuous waters.
Yeah, but I want to continue, Peter, that when you're ready to have these other conversations, don't contact me because in clarity, I can be controversial, but I will bring the truth and I will bring the evidence. Okay. I will always look to protect the rights of those who need empowerment.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you again, Anderson. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we start with your calls and your emails. Welcome back to Dr. Brass Talks, 434-1790. Let's have the first call and say good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Hey, how are you morning, sir? How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Good, good.
I good, man. Now, listen, there are a lot of people out there who say that they enjoy the dialogue between you and I.
Mm-hmm.
That none of us get too annoyed, but we press our point.
Mm-hmm. As it should be.
As it should be. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, let me start off. I read Ezra Allen with Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read what I told you?
I didn't, you know. I have had a chance.
No, you see, yeah. You see how agreements is fall apart.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no. I a couple other things came up, but okay. I really need all to. Yeah. All what right. I can I, promise I, you I, is I'm that holding, I read it in the break.
I am holding my part,
mm-hmm.
and I expect you to hold your part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then I think of your name, Peter. I said, you know something. Your mother wanted you to be a priest, you know.
The Rock.
Exactly.
The Rock.
Exactly. And I can tell you why.
I would like to be a priest, too. Yeah. Not but to be a priest. I would like to be a preacher.
Yeah, we can deal with that. We can deal with that. And I can tell you the reason why I believe that. You came out of the Maxwell family.
Mm.
And there's priests in there.
Mm. One is bishop. And
exactly. Jimmy Tudor. Father wanted him to be a priest, and there are priests in the Tudor. But you know, both the Maxwell and the Tudors were merchants.
Okay. Mm.
Right. So I follow in the family tree. Now, let me say this to you now, I started off with the Bible. The Bible is the only living book in the world.
And it's living?
It's the only living book you could put living.
How do you determine living?
Dictionary. I can tell you why.
Okay.
Every day it is used by people. Every day it is used by people.
But used by people for what?
But you don't worry about that.
I use it all the time.
All right, I can tell you for what now. All I am telling you is that the Bible is a living book. Whereas when I read Brexit from Ezra Allen, that same newspaper you may go into the fish market and find somebody wrapping fish in that same newspaper. You never see fish wrapped in a Bible. That is one nature is the living book. Even when sometimes a house burned down, the only book you find is the Bible. And most of the times when people go berserk mentally, you sit down with a Bible. When people go to prison, you sit down with a Bible. And every day as they care from the preacher's back, you use the Bible every day, even at funeral services. Now let me go on. I can give you one to read. And to the listening public, I want to read it. Proverbs 22, verses 16. The public could read the whole Proverbs, but this is what verse 16 says. That's what it tells you, that the Bible is a living book. He that oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want. You could read that, and you could digest it, but I finished with that. I get on to your politics that you started with.
Somebody here is telling me that the dictionary is used a lot more than the Bible, more frequently.
Anybody tell you so and over again, you know, man.
It's true.
I'm telling you, I finished with that. I'm arguing. I told that we can carry this public, we can carry this debate without interfering and let the public make the judgment.
All right.
Now, last week, I told you, I only referred to last week, but I got three questions to do politically as you start. But let me put this one out there because he says we are not arguing, we're just going to put forward our point. You remember last week I told you that it is a mystery that a man and a man can have sex and can produce. And I said a man and a woman can have sex and can produce. And you tell me what that has to do with me if I am not in the position of a man and a man.
No, you, but you I said I'm trying to understand what it has to do with you.
All right, good. Now, let me ask you
and
a question.
This idea that it is a mystery is not a mystery, but I mean,
okay,
it's understood.
All right, let me go on, though. You upwards to this man, I'm talking about abortion. Mm-hmm. You say you don't want the children. What abortion would it be to do with you? Tell me, no.
Sir, we discuss issues of public concern. There is a piece of legislation. Sir, there is a piece of legislation called the Medical Termination of Pregnancies Act.
But you can ignore
that speaks to that speaks to no, but you can't tell me that.
You tell me so last week, where's the talk about?
No, but the point is that the two things are not comparable.
Okay, all right, let me go on.
We can't go on. The two things are not comparable. If we are talking, and the conversation started not with you, but with Marsha, where we were talking about women's access to medical termination. I am an avowed feminist, and I am concerned about the fact that women who want to access medical termination of pregnancy should be able to do so. I have pursued that issue. It is an issue of public concern. What I am saying to you is that I am struggling to understand the public concern of two men sleeping together as far as you are concerned. Where's the public concern in that? What that has to do with the public?
But the fact remains that if two men can produce an...
Sir, you're missing the point. The issue of two men sleeping together and what happens or doesn't happen, I am asking you, what does that have to do with you? But you're not answering the question, and you're wasting time.
Peter, if two men could have produced a child and it would call for abortion, you'd get back it?
If they could and they would call for abortion, then it would be an issue for us to discuss, yes.
Yeah, let me go on. We did do that another time.
You ain't got to deal with it because you can't be saying it all the time.
Peter, we are always on par and we continue to debate strongly in the minds and the eyes of the public. Don't let us get aggressive with nothing or argue.
I ain't got aggressive. Right, I'm just asking you to explain your fascination with two men sleeping together. It's clearly something that is perplexing you that you got back to it in no 3 weeks.
Then nothing about that to fascinate me.
But then, but why are you mentioning it?
But what you mentioned,
was it to you?
You know you can't produce. Now, let me go on. Let me go to the
You
police.
Say you know I can't produce. You know about me? What you know about me? Huh?
Let me go on to the politics. We will come back to that. I don't want to bore the listeners with that song.
All right.
Only a little piece.
Let's proceed.
Yeah. Now, you spoke about the Democratic Labor Party. And you talk not saying things. But let me give a little hint about the pigeon. I know you've never spoke about the pigeon before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had no boy this. If you had captured somebody pigeon, like then you were boy, you would carry somebody pigeon, and you put it in your coop, and you let go just for the pigeon to eat wings, you know that guy? Just where it come from. In politics, then people get mature, the changes, but they end up just where they come from. Here? That's the beginning.
So tell me the solution to that riddle now. What's the point?
The point is, when things are all settled after the election, people go back home to where they come from.
Meaning?
Let me go back. We will deal with that at a later date. Now, we're talking about the cabinet that barely the people don't have a shot of cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear anything worthwhile from the 27 cabinet members that you got? That the present government got, unless Mayor Motley herself is the star girl.
I hear a lot that's worthy. We have been discussing the initiative to remove plastics and styrofoam from the shelves. That is an initiative of Kirk Humphrey that we've been discussing. We have been discussing changes to crop over and so on, which are initiatives of Minister of Culture.
That's
no, but the point is that there are things coming out of the ministries, and to suggest differently is entirely untrue. There's stuff coming out, and when there's stuff coming out, there needs to be a response.
All right, let me ask you another.
No, I try to get you to get straight to the point and tell me, instead of giving me riddles, what exactly is the reason that we don't have a shadow cabinet in place?
But that's what, now listen, let me ask you a question. In case tomorrow because the ruling party is the party of interest and of paramount importance. You know that.
Agreed.
The party that in power has more initiative than the one that waiting in the wings. You remember Eric Williams never had a shadow cabinet and he kept all his meetings and Whitford Square?
Whitford Square.
Whitford Square. Good. Now let me ask you a question though. This is something I would like to happen to her car. I knew her and I respect her a long time. But politics is politics and personal relationship is something else. Suppose it happened to Marley, the event with the late Tom Adams. Who would you put as Prime Minister within the Barbados Party?
If what? Sorry, repeat
if
that.
Mayor
right.
Had to stay ill or die. Suddenly. Who will be the replacement in the Barbados Day?
My choice or who I think they would put?
Who you think they would put?
I don't know who they would put. But you want to hear my choice?
Yeah.
My choice would be Santia Bradshaw. And I think I've said it on the program before.
Okay, good.
So anytime Mia is finished with this business, my vote goes to Santia.
So people like
that. I think it's time that Foundation had a Prime Minister. Well...
You're gone back with that school thing again.
I think it's time that I think that Foundation had a Prime Minister of whom we could be proud.
You're gone back with the school thing again. All right, good. No,
but that's not the only reason that I like her. There are other reasons that I like her too.
But you like it. See, I tell you, forget personality. You deal with reality.
But no, I'm just saying in terms of the individuals at the table, that's the one that I like most. I don't know who they will put because quite frankly... you know, there will be a lot of competition in the run-ins for that pick if the opportunity were presented.
And all parties. The other one, as you said, the branches. Now, let me put it this way.
We're going to have to wrap up, though. So you make the branch point, and then we're going to go.
This is the last I can tell you. Give me the branch. I can tell you about branches. I don't believe in branches. I can tell you why I don't believe in branches. The majority of people that are associated with political branches, both B and D. You don't know that after they left the room with the politician, the Sunday or whatever the meeting keep, you don't hear them inside the constituency talking with nobody in politics. They don't even associate with the people. But you know what them is? The 8 or 9 people that want to make a choice for 3,000 or 4,000 people in the constituency. You tell me a branch works way more than a political leader going through the constituency and find out who the people want than the few 8 or 9 members that attend a branch meeting every other Sunday or every one Sunday in a month to choose a candidate to represent 3,000 people. I don't believe in it. Thank you, Peter.
All right, sir. Two quick responses. Someone has just told me that apparently the best-selling book of all time is the Quran. Over 3 billion copies of the Quran have been sold, while only 2.5 billion of the King James Version have been sold. So that one is for you. And another individual is telling me, what's all the fuss about production? Mosquitoes also produce offspring. So there you have it, sir. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, hi, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing? From one of my friends to the other. So no Calypso talk today.
No Calypso. Don't Calypso.
You read Marsha's op-ed?
Pardon me?
You read Marsha's op-ed on the Sometimes Calypso?
No, not really, because I look like quite strong back.
And the one that you can't see she face because every time you see she boxy.
I look like quite strong back. Yeah, yeah. Right. I like the melody. I think Led Pike has been there and thereabout. And this year he really jumped up to the top of the glass, honestly. Right. Anyhow, I can use a line from Ramsey's Calypso this year that led him to the final. The language changed when the opposition party formed the government. So I embraced my reality. The language changed, the behavior pattern also changed, buddy. And I would just say to say, nobody ran me from the Democratic Labour Party. I take up my own mental thoughts and my feet, and I run away from the Democratic Labour Party.
Yeah. You might run back the same way.
And join Mayor Motley. Right? That is the only person that I was close to, and that was the only person that I follow in the Barbados Labour Party. So my support went to Mayor Motley. So I embraced my reality. And I also know the kind of treatment that people get when they cross the political divide. So he ain't got to remind me to march back to the Democratic Labour Party. I make my own decision, right? I want to say this to you, though, Peter. It is funny where people around political parties that cannot make a decisive decision of their own thinking to form a conversation like what you and I had, like what you and I shared last week, when we look at the political constituencies, right? All you and I was talking about is the near, the what you call the seats that no many post-major parties can rely on, right? So telling me to run back or walk back or march back really didn't make no sense. It show a person with their political emptiness, okay?
Well, you see, the problem in this program is a lot of people feel that everything you or I say is phrased in the context of as a B or as a D.
Yeah.
People don't understand that you can look outside of that.
You know, and yeah. I thought that last week you and I had such a wonderful conversation.
I did too, actually.
You know, me? You know, we look at the constituent, we look at St. Lucie, we look at Santia, we look at St. Joseph, we look at St. Thomas, we look at Duguid, we look at these seats that either a party could rely on, or say, for instance, a party don't know how it will turn out on election day. You understand?
Yeah.
But some people can't handle that. Some people can't handle that. And I hear this thing about, oh, the line long, Wesley, the line long, so you know you got to line up. I lined up at Holy Innocent School for milk and biscuits, and they hate and that line. And I line up no more.
They had a school meals then, this year. You had a line up once.
I had a bit of school meals, buddy.
Oh, you had school meals too?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would say this to you, huh? So anybody think that Wesley come into the Barbie Slipper, take away something from them, think of another thing come in. Mm-hmm. Wesley is a tradesman. Okay? A tradesman. Mm-hmm. So I depend on my own key, right? It's true, I was glad that something came my way. But I embrace the reality. I know that anything came in my way.
I personally, and I'm not about that. I think when we have conversations on the radio, it is really to see how we can advance understanding and knowledge and so on. And that to me is what it is. Some of us have political angles. That's neither here nor there.
Funny,
but
Peter,
I don't understand
so
why
funny.
People should
you
read that into everything we
say. Peter?
Yeah, sure.
You remember the saga between Maria Egard and the Barbie Slave Party?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I know friends of mine that there was a big division among the supporters in the Barbie Slave Party and members, right? And they had nothing good to say about Mia Motley. And now today, they made Mia Motley biggest fans.
Yeah, and not only that, I think Mia Motley knows that too.
Let me explain. They had their membership card in their back pocket to carry back down to Robert Street. You understand me? I never get involved, because I always tell you and whoever asks me that I'm a U boy on the block. We have come to the Barbie Slave Party, and I still learn in the BLP way. You remember that?
Yeah, you remember you said that.
But I never get involved in that. So I don't think that I can't carry in there for nobody. I like Mia Motley. I still like her. But I embrace my reality. There's nothing for people like me that cross. All right? And I could tell you, the Democratic Labour Party doors ain't closed to me because I ain't followed with nobody down there.
I'm sure that if you spoke nicely to Verla, she would be happy to have you back.
No, but you see, and there's the thing, right? Me and them had no quarrel,
I and all might get invited, you never know.
George Pilgrim remained my biggest friend in the Democratic Labour Party. I speak to Michael Lashley almost every week. I mean, even during the time that I in the last election.
No, but Donville, you still speak to Donville too?
You know, I like Chris Sinclair as much as I can like a brother.
Wesley, you hear what I say? Ask if you still speak to Donville.
No, I'm telling you, I come from the air, and Donville's situation now, and I said when it first broke that I will not distance myself from my friend. No, he
You did say that. I was being facetious. You did say that, and I have said the same thing.
I would like to see Donville walk the streets of Bridgetown again as a free man.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what friends is all about.
Yeah.
So, tall boy and all the rest could put that in the smoke and pipe it.
Pipe and smoke it.
No. Smoke in the pipe. And I go on.
All right, Wesley, thanks a lot for calling. It's always good to hear yourself and Tallboy facing off on these programs. We're going to take a break and come back with more of Down to Brass Talk.